Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Oi, the boys and girls on Footy Prime on occasion are known to use vulgarities and frankly appalling language, and sometimes the tales can get quite adult in nature, so keep the volume down if there are kiddies around, and thank you for listening.
Oh, let's go!
Booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started.
Booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started. You know that we are the number one show. So grab your fucking mitts and now it's time to go. Cause it's the
booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started. It's the
booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Amy, Jimmy, JC. All we know and all we talk about is
booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started tonight.
You're listening to Footy Prime the Broadcast, a broad perspective of all things footy. Footy Prime, your almost daily footy fix.
Seeing the grounds behind you.
I thought this was a better view than the offices.
That's so exciting. I'm so excited. I don't know why I'm so excited about that. But my messy kitchen, beautiful soccer grounds.
Is that the skylight behind you, Claire? Because it looks like fluorescent lighting, but actually it's not. It's much better than fluorescent lighting.
She lives on a skylight.
Oh, no. Claire, I don't know what that was, but it was your headphones, your earbuds are clicking.
Oh, is that me?
Yeah, you're good.
Unless you've learned Swahili. Yep, I think it's your earbuds.
No. And I also don't usually use the earbuds because you sent that email and you were like, earbuds are preferred. I was like, whoa, that was
I did
me.
Not yell. It was
that
not
was at me.
There is still no host for the 2027 Women's World Cup.
Oh my God.
It was
God,
not that.
Right?
But it should be noted, FIFA Congress, I think, will be announcing that between the three bids on May 17th.
Yeah, good. Don't worry though. Saudi Arabia is, you know, in there
waiting
for the men.
Waiting to swoop in, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this is Footy Prime the Broadcast and or a broadcast because Rian is coming to us from Wales. So whichever you prefer. I'm Amy Walsh. We have Rian Wilkinson and Claire Rustad. And waiting in the wings, very special guest, AC Lang.
Yay.
Hey. Welcome, hey, AC.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for making the time for us. We know you are a dietitian, correct?
Oh, I'm currently at work being a dietitian. Don't tell my employer.
Do you know how many times I've podcasted from work?
Yeah. We won't tell anybody.
Okay.
But people know you as the person behind WSoccer.ca. So, I mean, from the outside, you can launch into a little bit more about what it means to you and what your platform's used for. But I think you aim to increase the visibility of Canadian women in soccer. And if you don't already subscribe, AC and WSoccer.ca, a must follow, just for the newsletter, which you drop monthly, keeping everybody up to date on youth national teams, our current national team, Canadians abroad, whether they're in that national team pipeline or pool or not. So you are a big piece, I think, of people who are looking to follow women's soccer, not knowing where to start. So maybe you tell us a little bit more about what you do. Well, dietitian aside, but then what you do in the women's soccer space.
Yeah, thanks. That's really nice of you to say. It all started about 4 years ago now, when I was working with CARM as part of League One. And we started this poster campaign to sell posters so that we could get more females coaching. And that I started the social media platform in that vein just to find customers. And 4 years later, I feel like we've built something really cool. There's like a community of us, I think about 8,000 now. And the goal, as you said, yeah, it's promoting women in soccer, Canadian women in soccer, not just the ones in the national team. That's always been important for me as well, because there's so many professionals playing abroad and we've seen a real boom. And yeah, it really comes from a place of my own interest and just trying to share that with as many people as possible.
Well, amazing. We're really, really pleased to welcome you here. And is it okay, and I can cut this out later, but you have been also working with Rian as part of Project Aid and building that pathway. Is that okay? I probably should have vetted this prior to launching into this, but can we talk about that a little bit?
I think I talk about AC all the time.
Great.
I got put in touch with AC when everyone was so stressed and no one gave me proper brief. And then I spoke to AC and I was like, help me with all this stuff. And it was in no way her expertise area. I got her straight into data. And this is... This is who she is, as someone who just jumped in and did so much work and is doing so much work to help prepare for the launch of Project 8. So I'm a huge fan because, it's been great getting to know you, AC, but also just watching you work and how I think you're really one of these people that are the reason why women's soccer in Canada continues to grow even without a league, just because there's so many people that are so motivated and willing to do the hard yards to make anything work. So appreciative of that.
Izzy, I was just going to say, how did you get into women's soccer? Were you a player yourself? And then follow up to that, or two-parter, where do you find the time to do all this? Because this just isn't kind of a hobby. Like, you're having to devote a fair amount of time to put out the quality content that you're sort of churning out on the regular.
Yeah, I was really born into soccer. I was born in Germany. I have an older brother who loved soccer from the offset. I have a twin brother who also loves soccer. So it wasn't even optional, I don't think. And so I started playing at a young age. Then we moved to Canada, kept playing here at the youth level. Moved back to Germany for a bit to do some high school there. My family just had moved. And I got to play in Germany for Eintracht Frankfurt's second team, which was really cool to see the level there. I feel like that really helped me. Then I played university soccer in Canada. And so I've just my whole life been involved with all types of soccer, like admin. I've worked for clubs. I've coached. I haven't reffed because I don't think I would be very good at it. I don't have good relationships with the refs.
Knowing where your strengths and weaknesses are, that's pretty good.
Yeah. And then in terms of finding the time, I mean, it's like anything. If you love it, it doesn't really feel like work. And yeah, I'm watching it anyway. So it doesn't really add that much time. For sure, the writing takes a little bit of time, but I keep good track like throughout the month. And then it's relatively easy to put together.
AC also has two dogs, so it's not just that. They just have a new puppy as well, so like a whole other level of work.
Another level of chaos.
Yeah,
for sure. But there are two things there. I want to be able to say Eintracht Frankfurt the way that you just did. I'm going to workshop that, and I'll maybe next month, the month after, I'll see where I stand. And a twin thing, because we have a twin thing here. I have twin sisters. I have twin children, boy, girl, twins, and Rian is a twin. So, Claire, are you the odd person out here?
I have two sets of twins within my cousin, so they're there.
Okay, twin powers activate. We've got it going on in the broadcast, you guys. But one thing, AC, I love, like, you are my go-to account, anything women's soccer, whether it's Women's Champions League, whether it's W Gold Cup. She scores bangers, who is also a friend of the podcast, who has been on here, also one of my go-to podcasts. But you put together a great kind of NWSL crash course for anybody, Canadians or otherwise, just looking to find out more about it. So there's so many cool storylines in NWSL this year, expanding to 14 teams. You've got, you mentioned Carm off the top. For anybody who doesn't know who Carm is, that's Carmelita Moscato, assistant coach now with, is it Racing Louisville? Carm is? Yep. And lots of Canadians. I had said erroneously on a previous podcast for Footy Prime that there were 19 Canadians currently in NWSL, but there are 24, I believe, now, because you fact-checked me.
Where did you come
from? I double-checked this. But so with all these cool things happening in NWSL, what are you looking to this year as like a storyline that you'll be following closely?
Yeah, I feel like we really hit peak Canadian content in the NWSL this year, for sure. There's so many different things to look at. I mean, there's three teams with three Canadians on their squad. So, like, immediately we have three teams that we're following really closely. I think what I'm watching, I really want to see how these rookies pan out. We had such a strong draft class, which we haven't had in a while. So I want to see how Amanda West does at Houston, how Zoe does at in Utah. She didn't play in the first game. And then how Maya Jones does at San Diego. I'm really curious to see how the rookies pan out, because that's just more players adding to our player pool, which is up to 160, by the way. We started at like 110 when they first launched Project 8, and we're at 160. So we added 50 new professionals. Yeah. And other storylines, obviously Jesse and Janine playing with Sinks last season. Like, that's going to be something really cool to see. And then generally it's such a close league that it's any kind of prediction, I'm always like, ooh, let's tab that and see how wrong they were, because they're going to be so wrong. The league is so,
keep the receipt, like, right?
Yeah, the parity is unreal. So I'm just really excited to see how the season goes.
How about you, Ree, and NWSL? What are you looking to this year?
Yeah, I mean, there's just been a lot of change on the teams, especially with two expansion teams again. So I think 2022, there's two expansion teams and then none and then two. And with the way that those drafts occur and with the player movement, it's such an NWSL thing. So it's just complete reshuffles of teams, and then you don't know how it's gonna unfold. So I'm really, it's hilarious watching the table after one weekend of games, just where everyone's lying. And I think it'll be really, really close. I don't think there'll be a runaway leader at all this season. And then we'll see if I'm right. Probably be wrong. Who knows?
Yeah, because certainly like the opening weekend did not disappoint from a Canadian perspective, right? We had Janine Becky with a brace. We had Jesse Fleming with her first assist as a Thorn. We had Bianca St. George with a brace. We had Amanda Allen, Victoria Pickett with assists. Like, the list goes on and on. Oh my goodness. How could I forget about Lizianne? Insane, yeah. Right?
And what Jordan a great performance. Taken down. I mean, there's a lot of Canadians that were, I think we've got a few injuries. Maya Jones is injured, but it's great. We've got Sinky starting in Portland, turning 41 in the summer. And then we've got Maya Jones, who just joined, Amanda West, all these. I don't know some of these rookies as well, but it's so great to see our youth system on show, knowing that in very short order we'll have a Canadian league to help support and hopefully lure them back to the homeland soon.
How about you, Claire? Are you looking or following any individual or team or narrative closely?
I mean, I think I'm a little in my vast spare time. A little hyper-focused on the Olympic Games coming up. So focusing a little bit more on some of the players. Like, I think that Canada's success at the Olympic Games in a large part rides on Janine Becky sustaining the level that she showed in her first game back. And if that continues and translates over to the international level, then I think Canada has the potential to actually be quite successful in this supposed sort of transitional time for them. And I'm also just really interested to see how, I think we talked about this before, but how Jesse Fleming settles in there
and hopefully in a much more prominent role in Portland that she had previously at Chelsea. And I think minutes are really important for her, because I think those two players in particular, their how their kind of season goes leading up to the Olympic Games is really important for Canada's success at the Olympic Games. I'm doing the Olympics. Did I tell you guys that?
That what?
I'm doing the Olympics with CBC. I don't know if I told
no,
you that.
No, that's great.
Amazing.
Congrats. Yes.
That's kind of the thing that I kind of honed in on after that. Becky's really impressive performance in her first match back. So I'm just hopeful that is sustained. And hopeful that, you know, even that Heidema finds her feet as well. Because I think the more variety the Canadian team has in the attack, the better they are. And if those players are producing consistently, that's a really encouraging sign. I know I've said that like 1,000 times before, but
yeah. And tough decisions certainly for Bev as she looks to make that 18 player roster. And I've heard chatter or seen it on Twitter and after Becky's performance, people saying, oh, as she worked her way back into Bev Priestman's roster. I mean, let's be honest, guys, she was never not in that 18. But anyway, well, I'll get your opinions in a bit. But before we dive into that really in depth, did you guys get a chance to watch any of the Women's Champions League quarterfinals this past week?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, AC. Since Rian and Claire with their spare time and loads of yeah, but I think for the first time in its 23-year history, I mean, revamped recently, all four quarterfinal first legs were won by the away side, which is interesting, but a bright spot. And maybe AC, you can kind of give us an overview, but dive into this. So at Johan Cruyff Stadium, Kadisha Buchanan on Chelsea's second goal does a Cruyff turn and provides a secondary assist on that goal and a strong performance. Hayes actually said, amazing performance. This is quote. I told her that at the end, the last two games, I think she's shown her best level in a Chelsea shirt. So good things for Buchanan as she seems to be rounding into form, AC.
Yeah, I mean, I think they bought her for this purpose, right? They want to win the Champions League, and Kadisha has won Champions League many times. And so to see her
five times, right?
Yeah, just five, you know.
Yeah, no big deal.
To see her kind of deliver these types of performances in the last two games and even the previous Champions League performance for her got really high ratings. It's just amazing to see because we're getting into the knockouts now and she looks like her old self. She looks like her best self, which is really exciting. Obviously, it held the clean sheet as well. People had a lot of worries about the back line with Millie Bright not being there, but I think Kadisha in this form, they'll have a really good shot at winning this Champions League.
Because she did have a bit of a rocky debut when she came over from Lyon to Chelsea and looked to not only find her footing in a new side, but find her confidence. It almost seemed that took a little bit of a hit. And then we saw that translate to the national team. Are you, Rian, do you see Kadisha? I mean, obviously, if you look at that back line and the way that Canada's playing, it's not how Kadisha goes, Canada goes, but pretty key component of that back line and how solid they look defensively, don't you think?
I think Kadisha's been a bit of a challenge for them because I don't think she's been solid and I don't think she's been consistent. And I don't know why, but that's translated to Canada. I don't think her performances have been a level that she would like. So in that way, I was really proud of her for this performance because I think she has been working towards that. And I'm not saying things have been easy for Kadisha, but she came onto the national team and has been delivering since she was a teenager pretty consistently. And then she's had this blip. Now, I don't know why, like that absolutely could be injuries or personal. I don't know, but I think you do see players actually fall off sometimes because they haven't built up the resilience of having sort of off periods. And I'm really proud of her for finding the motivation to push through. She'll reach a new level now and she's needed to. This is one reason she went. And I think it's really exciting for her, for Chelsea and for Canada, what's going on with her.
And I would argue, Amy,
Yeah, I do think as Khadija goes, Canada goes, because I think we saw pretty clearly she was quite unwell at the World Cup, and the back line just crumbled.
Yeah.
And if they're going to stick with this formation, which I think we've all agreed that we like, right? Yeah.
Yes, agree.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like we all agree that we like it, and it's much more, it allows them to spring forward a lot more. But if they're going to go with that, they have to have three in-form, reliable defenders. And I think they're starting to really see that in Jade Rose, and Vanessa Gilles has been pretty consistent as well. But I mean, I do think that the main cog there is Buchanan, and if she's informed, that's a really tight back three. But if she's not, I don't know what it is about her really. I think the confidence side of thing is part of it. I think that all of the members of the back three kind of look to her for kind of like an organizational touchstone, but also from a confidence perspective. And I think when that's not there, they feel shaky, and it shows. It really shows. So I he does need to be informed for them to be successful at the Olympic Games. And yeah, I think it's great that she's starting to kind of find her footing.
Yeah, it's good to see for sure. And then if we just transition a little bit, looking at the weekend schedule for, we've talked about NWSL, got into the Champions League games, but the WSL, there's a big Manchester derby this weekend. And AC, is it you in conjunction with Northern Lights? You guys have put together this fabulous scheduling system. So for any women's soccer followers, like, you can just load it into your phone and you're not going to miss any fixture. You're behind this, right?
Yeah, partially. It's a few of us that work together because obviously a lot of information, but one of the key barriers to access has always been kind of, where do I watch? What time is it on? Where can I see this? So no excuses now.
Is there an app? Have you created an app or a website?
No, it's like a Google Calendar file. And okay. Yeah, like Amy said, you can either download it or just like access it live, because we do update it once in a while.
Nice.
And for people to find it, do they just need to find you on Twitter or Northern Lights on Twitter, and then they can access it through there?
Yeah, it's pinned on Northern Lights' Twitter page. So if you go to Northern Lights Supporters Group, it's the pinned tweet there.
Amazing. And I needed to get this joke in. I saw somebody, I can't claim it as my own, I saw it on Twitter, but women's soccer is frequently abbreviated and referred to as women, like WOSO, WOSO. And so somebody's like, well, naturally then men's soccer would be MOSO. And then a referee was talking about DOGSO, so denying an obvious gold scoring opportunity. So there's no real joke there, but I like the WOSO, MOSO, DOGSO.
I thought it was BROSO.
BROSO, yes. That would be better than MOSO. I just like that little play on words. So what are you looking to this weekend, AC, for like a can't miss fixture in women's football?
And definitely the Manchester Derby, because there's so many implications for the title race. Arsenal kind of said goodbye to the title with their last performance versus Chelsea. So it's really just City and Chelsea now, kind of neck and neck. So definitely tune in. I think it's on Sportsnet if you want to watch that. It's early on the West Coast, though. I think it might be like 5:30. Sorry, Claire.
My kid got up at 5:30 this morning and demanded I book tennis court time, so I'm good.
Yeah, perfect.
Maybe Milo can smash a couple tennis balls while you watch the Manchester Derby, right?
Yeah.
That works.
Yeah, that might. I think.
Amazing. Okay, so we... Actually, before we move on to the Olympic roster discussion and hopefully six games that Bev Priestman and the squad will get prior to Paris 2024, did you guys catch Magda Eriksson writes for The Guardian as part of Moving the Goalpost, their women's football newsletter? And she's talking about injuries that she suffered with all of these fixtures. So there's a new tournament that was announced. So the NWSL will spend its break during the 2024 Olympics playing a tournament with teams from Liga MX Femenil. And it's a pretty laborious, not a very kind of cool name. It's called NWSL Times or X Liga MX Femenil Summer Cup. They could have done so much better with the name, you guys. So it'll feature 14 NWSL clubs, so all of the clubs, and six Liga MX Femenil teams. But at the same time, in order as a qualification for the FIFA Women's Club World Cup set to launch in 2026, we're going to have the CONCACAF Champions Cup for women. And Canada has an entrant, but it's coming before Project 8 is going to launch. So it will likely be the winner of the Interprovincial Championships. So lots to unpack there, you guys. But mostly my point was, yes, we want to create meaningful competition, meaningful fixtures, infrastructure for women's soccer. But how much is too much? And I think Magda Eriksson has a point talking about Europe. But are we entering the same kind of issues and problems here in North America? Why don't you go first, Stacey?
Well, my first question when I saw the NWSL Liga MX thing was, did they talk to CONCACAF about this? Because the CONCACAF is starting their competition in the fall, but then this is another competition that's going on in the summer in the Olympic break. So I just was wondering if they had communicated because the timing was really weird. Yeah, I didn't read Magda's piece.
Yeah. Was that clear? It's women's soccer. I don't think anybody's communicated.
No, everybody's working in these silos. I think it's clear that they didn't, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I didn't read the piece, though. I'm sure it's good. Magda's a great author. But I feel like we keep talking about this, right? We're like, Vic, it's too much. It's too much. It's too much. The men are saying it's too much. I wonder what it'll take for FIFA and others to listen.
A lot, because they have a lot of money because of it. They probably did talk. There's no other place to put it in the calendar because there's this gap. And because of World Cups and qualifiers, there's usually this little window, not every year. It's an interesting one because it's wrong on the men's side and the women are being very vocal about it. And we're seeing a ton of ACLs and overuse and all this crazy stuff. But at the same time, we're still in the very infancy of arguing for parity, financial parity mostly. And so it's just that new ammunition. So the argument is going to be now, like you can already see what the argument's going to be of like why women shouldn't have parity. Well, they don't want to play as many games or they're not, you know, it used to be there weren't the fans. And then you sort of tick the fan box and then it moves on to like, oh, well, it's because of this reason. And this will now be the current reason why women shouldn't be paid the same as men is because they don't play as many games. Whereas it's just so obvious on the women's side how wrong it is. And it should not be happening on the men's side either. Like it's not sustainable. And instead of people recognizing it and pulling back, they're actually adding. It's all financially driven. And you ask who's talking, who's not talking. It's football people and the money makers aren't talking or don't have equal votes on these for sure.
Yeah, and you know you will hear too, though. Sorry, Claire, go ahead.
Well, no, I'd argue the moneymakers are talking. They just don't care.
They're not talking. They don't have equal vote with the football people.
Yeah, and it's like, I mean, you said the quiet part out loud. It's like, it's all about money. And I think that, and it's, you're right. I think, no, I just agree with Rian. That's what I came here to say. I agree with what Rian just said.
I do as well. And you know, we will hear this sort of tired old trope that women's bodies are ill-suited to deal with the rigors of football fixtures as compared to the men. So that will be always sort of like the subtext or what exists beneath that narrative for clamoring for parity.
Well, and people who say that have never had to like practice against Amy Walsh.
But you know,
until you leave a practice with like a full half of your torso bruised and like part of your scalp missing.
Innocent, Claire.
I know I'm not innocent. With all like the Olympic stuff in there and kind of harping or kind of like looking back at some of the imagery of like when we played, and somebody talked about how like when they play hosts in the, I can't remember what the record was, playing hosts in the round robin. And I remember when we played China and I start to have, like, I get flashbacks to that game and I'm like, yo, I flattened some girls. Like, flatten them. No, I was not going for the ball. Flatten them. So, yes, I'm not innocent.
Delayed red card. But I'm going to argue a little bit that it is somewhat correct. Only in that, like, girls start getting treated more professionally or getting trained in a more professional manner so much later than the boys. And if you're looking at it, a lot of them, and including us, we probably only really started getting a kind of higher level of soccer at 15.
Maybe even higher. Like, we probably weren't treated like professionals, so we hit the national team, right? Like,
well, that, just, and then I'm saying, and then
and
most of
then,
us...
it could be argued that we were not treated as professionals.
So our bodies aren't.
Sorry, man.
I'm just saying our bodies aren't, but not in the way that that argument's being made. But yeah, part of the reason, in my opinion, there's so many injuries is overuse, but also that, like, we've skipped so many steps. There's not that development piece behind these women, female athletes, and they don't have anything to fall back on. I mean, I'm going to scare people by saying this, but when I see young girls getting a first ACL, what scares me the most is, like, how are they recovering? Because you've got to rebuild that muscle foundation, and they didn't have it in the first place. So a lot of times, I'm generalizing, so then the reoccurrence is absurd, because then they start even lower from a lower starting position. Then you see another injury. So yeah, I think that argument does need to be considered, but in a completely different way from a different angle, because it's real, but not because of anything the women are doing. It's because of what they haven't been given in their career so far.
Yeah, it's about earmarking some of that money in those coffers so that you can do the proper reset research, so that you're equipping these players, the technical staff, the medical staff, to give them the wherewithal to cope with the rigors.
Well,
right?
And also
not just throw them in there and hope for the best.
And also the resources when they go home, right? So, like, yeah. I mean, it's one thing to have the resources in camp with the national team. I mean, I know that everybody who's playing now has a professional environment to go back to, but having the resources there, but having off-season resources as well. I mean, I'm an extreme example, but I grew up in a, like, tiny little rural place. Where was I going to go? There was nothing. There was nothing. And if that had happened to me, I mean, I would have been rehabbing on my own. I mean, there were times when I was unattached playing for the national team. We didn't have a club team.
We were team unattached, right? That was, like, it was unattached FC.
Yeah.
For a long time. Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah. But I just wonder about, like, that off season time, what players have available to them. And I know it's so much different now, but I think that, you're right, Rian. I mean, when you're starting so far behind the eight ball, with your kind of, like, body literacy and just, like, your kind of foundational level of fitness that starts at a young age, you're starting behind the eight ball. Yeah. You're going to get injured, especially when they jack up the number of games so fast.
Yeah. And I think too, like, AC, with the database of players that you have, and Gabby Carl actually wrote a great article for RDS, which is the French version of TSN, talking about her move from Sweden to Washington and just the difference there in terms of what was at her disposal for recovery, for staff, just resources. So do you see, like, yes, we're seeing more Canadians involved in different tiers of professional soccer, but that's clearly something that these players are going to have to struggle with and deal with, is what is available to them to support them as professionals, right?
Yeah, the standards vary so much. And so the top end, yeah, they're being taken care of now, but there's a lot underneath that are still pretty suboptimal in terms of the conditions that they're playing in, training in, what they're receiving for medical, et cetera. And then my other thought about this was, a lot of female athletes, specifically in, like, adolescence, underfuel pretty significantly, which is something I actually studied in university. And there's a lot that combines in with that, like body image, social media, et cetera, just, like, knowledge. And a lot of athletes are underfueling at a young age as well.
And that female athlete triad that we see, right?
Mm-hmm. That's what I studied. Yeah. Yep. They rebranded it. It's relative energy deficiency in sport now.
Can you talk about those three just briefly, and then we'll take a break and we'll come back and we'll dive into Olympics a little bit?
Yeah, so the triad was basically a combination of low energy availability, so, like, not eating enough to fuel your performances, losing your period, that was an outcome of low energy availability, and then stress fractures, so issues with bone density and that kind of thing, which is really problematic for young girls because our bone density peaks earlier than men. So that's the female athlete triad, but they've expanded it since then. So if you're curious, I would definitely look it up, relative energy deficiency.
AC, thank you so much for mentioning that, because I think we don't. There's this like huge scope of injury prevention, and we talk about like not professionalizing. And then one of the biggest pieces that you've just said, we don't talk about, which is it has improved, but I'll speak for Amy and Claire, because I know it already, how many of our teammates were anorexic in college. And it was a mark, it was almost like a sign of good training to lose your period. And how many of them we know who got stressed. It is unbelievable. And it has improved, but it's still there. It's different. That's a male and female thing that it's on the male side as well. But this body consciousness piece and the lack of understanding between the fueling part and the weight part it's scary that that is still such a huge problem at the
UK. Yeah. We work with eating disorders every day. So it's very like salient to my life. So thought I'd bring it up.
Yeah. And I think it's not even just the players who go who end up with kind of actual eating, like, you know, probably pathological eating disorders. But I mean, it's players who just have disordered eating habits too. Right. Which, I mean, I had that for sure. And
gets reinforced in camp, right? By perceived good practices, right? For like certain food avoidance and things like that. And then everybody subscribes to that, but to their detriment.
I know. And we're all, we have some extreme examples with certain coaching staffs that came in and took all the food away from the vegans. It was like, then when they took peanut butter away, remember that?
That caused a bit of a revolt. Like take the mustard. Remember they were going to even take the mustard, take the condiments. Don't. And Reen, I don't want to bring you into disrepute, either your mother or the Wales FA. But I really want to say the F here, but I won't protect you, but like not the F peanut butter. Come on.
Yeah. Not the peanut butter.
Leave us that. But we'll take, sorry, Claire, finish up and then we'll take a quick break.
Oh, yeah, no, I was just thinking about how we're all kind of competitive by nature, and how much kind of like undiagnosed anxiety is also floating around there too. I mean, I was a prime example of that. And when you have no guidance, that just festers. And when you don't have, when there's kind of like no, when nobody talked about it, nobody talked about kind of good nutritional intake, and nobody without the topic of weight coming into it, right? That was always there in the background. When it's not framed properly, there's just no, and you're dealing with, like, you know, at the time we were 17 to 19 kind of breaking into the national team, and it's like you're dealing with a very delicate age. I'm glad that it's being talked about more and being looked at more and being addressed in a healthier way. Because I think that was, I mean, that was certainly to my detriment as a player. I hope that is becoming less frequent.
Yep. And Fran Kirby, I believe, either spoke about it or wrote an article and just talking about her own body image and the way that coaches perceive certain players based on what type of build or body type they are. And that as the women's game is exploding for the better, you're seeing different and varied profiles. And that's an important element towards furthering and expanding our game, that different like heights and different statures and different body compositions and just different builds are going to be good footballers. We don't all fit into this narrow scope or this tiny box or boxes. It's the broadcast after all. So anyway, we'll take a quick break and we'll come right back and we'll dive into Olympic selection and potential headaches that Bev Priestman might have.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What up, Primers? It's JC, that guy. Don't miss a second of Premier League action only on FuboTV. Subscribe at FuboTV.com/FootyPrime. With Serie A, League One, and One Soccer 2, you can get it all at FuboTV.com/FootyPrime. Now, back to the show.
It's like meant to be halfway. We have like 10 minutes left. Really great conversation, though, guys. Okay, we're back, and we could have continued in that same vein because really compelling and interesting chatter about body image, about nutrition and disordered eating. Is it dysmenorrhea? Is that how you say it, AC, when absence of
amenorrhea.
Period? Yeah.
Dysmenorrhea is menorrhea that hurts.
Oh.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Amenorrhea.
Amenorrhea, yeah.
Okay. Amen. Amen. Still got it. Anyway. Okay, so the Olympic draw. Did everybody watch? And before we dive in,
yes, I did. Actually got to see this. Sorry, I got really excited about that.
Go to you, Claire. But before we do that, they had Didier Drogba, and they had our own Stephanie Labbé, and we got to hear all about Didier and his time at Marseille and how he's doing. And Steph just stood there until she moved behind the famous balls that you open up to reveal the selections for the draw. So FIFA, you don't care about women's soccer. Women's soccer is an afterthought. Just confirmed at the Olympic draw. So thank you for that. Claire, your thoughts on the draw?
They did refer to them both as legends of the women's game. Like as they were introduced, they were like, let's look at two legends from the women's game. And I was like, oh, cool. Who's it going to be? And I was like, oh, good job, Steph. And I was like, well, Drogba's not quite what I thought. Right.
Didier Drogba.
I know. So even he came out and he kind of looked like, really?
Yeah.
Also just like how many retired women's players are, I mean, I guess they're trying to kind of mix it up and have women's players and men's players do both things, but I don't know. It's just a point of contention. So, yeah, I think that's probably the best case scenario draw for the Canadians. I think that this is probably their best chance of advancing. I think this is probably, if you look at the way the groups are, not necessarily in terms of how the best teams being in each group, but how hard it's going to be to advance out of each group. I think the American group is probably going to be the hardest one to advance out of. I think Group C is going to be just delightful to watch. But I think the Canadians have the best chance of advancing out of the group that they're in, which is good. I think the cool part about, I think it's a goddamn shame it's not a 16-team tournament. That's my first point. And I think the cool part about women's football now is, I mean, I'm a huge nerd, and so I get out, like, the draw, and I get out the crossovers, and I'm, like, trying to kind of think about who's going to go. I can't even really make predictions about who's going to go through at the top of the group or second in the group or third in the group. Like, I can't do that in this tournament. You can sort of muddle through it, although the World Cup, but even this World Cup proved many of us very, very, very wrong, which was great. I think it's really hard to actually accurately predict who they might run up against in the knockout phase. Like, it's just, can't do that anymore. And I think that's a testament to how far the game has come. But yeah, best case scenario, I think, for the Canadians. I think they have a pretty decent shot of, well, certainly a decent shot of getting out of the group. You know, probably a pretty decent shot of like the first or second seed out of the group too. So we'll see. Those are my initial thoughts.
Listen, here's a bit of devil's advocate.
Oh, go for it.
You see the group and you're like, this is the best group by far. But actually, the group play is to prepare you for the next round, because it's.
I love your coach's hat. Canada should be getting out. I love your coach's hat so much. Go on.
Canada should be getting out of their group, and because it's such a small team tournament, like, we got through the group with a win, a loss, and a tie in 2012. Like, it's, you get out of the group if you're delivering even like subpar. You're meant to build through a tournament, and I'm struggling to see. Like, the only thing I can say is we don't know what we're going to get from Colombia or New Zealand. Like, so maybe they'll challenge them more than I'm thinking, but I think there's one like A level game here. Colombia might be the totally. But as soon as you get out of that group, you're really, chances are you're meeting a high level opposition. Really. I think that's the only concern. But of course, everyone's first reaction when you see the group and then you look at the other two, you're like, good draw. And then you're like, well, actually, you really want to have like these building games. These games are really going to push you so that you're ready for the next one. So that's just me playing devil's advocate, because it is so clearly the easier group of the three in my
opinion. It is. And I think when you look at it though, the Olympics is a tournament of, you just have to get out of your group, right? Because if you can get out of your group and you just need to win one game and you're in a medal game, right? Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah, you just have to win the quarterfinal, and you're in the medal game. In the medal game. You're playing for a medal, is what I mean.
Yeah.
And I think the order of their games, I think favors them in some ways. I think starting against New Zealand, like if they can't beat New Zealand convincingly, I'm not sure that. Just a second, buddy. If they can't,
Milo, what do you think of the Olympic draw?
You have thoughts? No, he says he doesn't have thoughts. Oh. Yes. I gotta make a bowl of Cheerios. So I think that the order of their matches actually, I think, favors them in some ways, because I think if they can start with a convincing win over New Zealand, which they should be able to do, why are you laughing?
I'm laughing because instead of ceding the floor to AC for her thoughts, you're like, I gotta make a bowl of Cheerios, and I'm just gonna soldier on with my thoughts.
I could stop. I'm sorry. I can make a bowl of
Cheerios. Why don't we come back to you?
Yeah, that's a great idea.
She's just fueling her son. It's good. I like it.
It's just too. It's like bringing us back to our previous discussion. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. No, the Olympic draw for sure. I agree with both of you guys, actually. Rian, for sure. I think France will push them, and it's good that it's the second game. There's going to be a lot of pressure on France, so really interesting to see how that works out. They did beat us last time we played them, and we didn't look good in that game. But obviously we have changed things tactically since then. I agree we should beat New Zealand convincingly. That would be a really great start to the tournament. Anything else kind of starts to instill that doubt. And then the last game, Colombia, I just hope that they don't like stomp us. Remember that US game where they were just out for blood? So I really hope that they don't do that, because I don't want any players to get hurt in such a small roster. And then that
like
game,
when they're out for blood against the US, but not so much against
Canada.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Right. Yeah,
that's right. Exactly. Yeah. But that will be interesting. I think it will push them as well in some ways with those top players that they have, and Caicedo, Ramirez, the one that just went to Washington. I'm blanking on the name, but I think it is definitely the easiest group, and there are ways that we'll get pushed, but not pushed as much as that those other groups would have pushed them.
It sort of all hinges on that France game, right? Because the Colombia game could mean nothing if they actually do well in those first two matches. So, I mean, I think that, like, the worst case scenario, I think, would have been having to play France in the third match and needing points. So I think their position in the group was decent as well. You're right. I mean, Rian's right. They're going to run smack into third place out of Group C. So Spain, Japan, Brazil, and one of the two kind of African qualifiers, and then, or they run into, I think they run into third place out of that group or second place out of the Germany, Australia, U.S. group. So there's no good quarterfinal option here.
As part of your Olympic commentating prep, do you have a bulletin board? Are you just glancing to your left at like a setup that you've already got?
I have my notes from watching.
Okay.
I have all the board. It's very homeland here right now. I write it all out on a big piece of paper so I can see the order of the games too. And the times. And the unfortunate part is their first game actually overlapped with the Spain-Japan game.
Oh yeah, how about that as a banner to kick things off, right?
I know, it's not.
I was going to tell you guys a little, I think it's interesting because people don't realize, but in the third, against Sweden in 2012, which was our third game, so we'd had a loss against Japan and then a win, and we were tied. We were 2-0 down. And then we came back and we were dominating Sweden. Like we actually were. But our game had extra time, I think, and another game had finished. So we knew that if we tied, we'd play GB. But if we won, we'd play Brazil before. And honestly, there was still about 8 minutes left. And I was on the right. And so I was having conversation with John during the game. He's like, if you guys want to go for it, it's up to you. Doesn't matter who we play. But if it remains like this, then we'll play GB. And like on the field, we're like, we're fine. So we kept playing. We weren't disrespecting the game, but that is something that happens that I don't think people realize. So we kept playing, we kept pushing, but could we have pushed more? I think, yeah, probably. And we may have won that game, which would have then had us meet Brazil. I think it was Brazil, but it's just something that people are aware that third place game, I think Claire alluded to it. Like you might feel the different team if you're already through. You might know the results of the next game. So there's a little bit of chess happening as well in that third game.
Yeah, caginess for sure. Well, I even remember the only minutes that I got as part of the 2008 Olympics is because we were playing that third game concurrently, obviously, but the other game had finished prior to ours because of whatever unforeseen delays. And I got on in the second half because we were already through. Which is kind of depressing.
Whoa, that's not true. No, that's not true. You started that game.
No, I did not.
The game against Sweden?
Yep. Nope. Definitely didn't start.
Well, then you came on in the second half and you played like the world's best cross that Tank finished on a diving header.
Yes, that is the snippet that I choose to remove from that game and tell.
Oh, well, I totally remember
Claire,
that.
Your memory.
It's awesome.
I know, right?
I remember
Claire?
Playing Sweden.
Claire's like that meme remember. With like the red string and like, you know, you're tying people to certain places and like murders and things like that. Like that's your brain right now, but soccer.
My brain?
Yeah. Yes, it's impressive. It's a compliment.
It's very homeland.
Yeah, there we go. Yep,
no,
you made that link.
That I tell too. That was the best. Well, I was like, I remember standing there being like, did that just happen? That was awesome.
Okay, Rian, I know no one really has a heart out, but I promised we'd try to stay as close to 45 as possible. AC, you've got a regular job to get back to. But what do you guys think? And this is probably opening a can of worms, but 18 player roster, where is Bev's toughest decision going to lie? Like, is it with an individual? Is it with a certain position? What do you guys think? Briefly.
Who's going for Rian, go first.
I think she'll have to make a hard decision whether this is for senior players, for veterans who've given a lot to the country, or whether she's going to go with the young players that she's blooded and have done so well. There's some injuries, unfortunately, that may force the hand on some of those, but I don't think it's positional. I think it'll be more like even the goalkeepers, like just look at the decision she's going to have to make now, and it'll be a little bit, and there's no right or wrong. It's just a coaching decision. It'll be, do you sort of go with the players that have gotten you here and that are so dedicated to the program, given so much and continue to be world leaders, or these young players that are exciting and unfazed and don't know anything but success and who have performed very well for her. So good luck to her.
Yeah, I'd argue that it is positional. And I think that the attacking player she chooses to take is going to be the hardest decision. Because I think that
that's what fell short in the World Cup, taking a couple, like a few injured players and not taking a chance on some younger players who may not necessarily have been ready, but I'm not sure that taking players who are at 50 or 60% was smart either. So I think it's going to come down to realistically, like, the form that players are in, closer to the date she has to actually name the roster. And like the level of recovery from injury and all of that. And I think being really smart about those attacking player choices and the combinations that she can use too. It's not just about like, oh, you know, like, you know, these four people are playing really well because they got to play together, right? It's not just about them playing well for their clubs, they actually have to work together. So it's about thinking about the combinations plus the form as well. And I think that's, look at me shooting my mouth off about like coaching decisions. What do I know? But I think thinking really, really strategically about the combinations that she can use up front. And I think that's going to be difficult. There can be some really hard decisions. There's some people left off that roster. They're going to make people angry.
Yeah, I get heart palpitations thinking about this. I don't know how coaches do it with 18. That's so tough. I agree with both points. Like, definitely the generational shift. Is it happening now? Are we going to delay it till after this Olympics? I agree the forwards is going to be the most interesting part of the roster, because in an 18-player roster, you cannot take injured players. Like, you need every player to be able to make an impact, right? So that's going to be fascinating to watch as well, the injury question. And then I just looked at the WSL ends in May. So some of those WSL players will have a little bit of time off, but there's a lot of NWSL and like Sweden-based players that will keep playing. So yeah, I don't know how Bev's going to do it. I worry for her mental health.
Yeah, but that's a good point there about the different leagues that players are in and whether that is a sort of in a pro column, a tick in a pro column, or it works against them because they're sitting idle for too long in Bev's mind, and maybe somebody who's more active and playing club minutes gets the nod. But it should be interesting. Just these six games that I alluded to earlier that they'll get pre-Paris, that, you know, the roster for She Believes and then these other friendlies, is that going to be – are they going to be auditions of sorts, or are we sort of past that point and then we're going to start to see the core of this Olympic roster emerge? But it's we'll be following that very, very closely. But thank you all for making time for the broadcast. Thank you, AC. Thank you, Claire. Thank you, Rian. FuboTV.com/footyprime is one of our sponsors. You can watch the men's team play Trinidad and Tobago tomorrow on One Soccer, and One Soccer will also have She Believes Cup, I believe. TonyBet.ca for any wagering you'd like to place on those matches. And Rian, just before we leave, what's upcoming for Wales and you?
Yeah, jumped right in. We've got Euro qualifiers at the beginning of April. So got the players showing up on the 31st and we hit the grass on the 1st. So we got a couple days of training and then we have our first game against Croatia in Wrexham. So I'm hoping my cousin Ryan Reynolds will be there. And Wales. And then we're off to Kosovo for the second game. So yeah, it's going to be a fun introduction. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, best of luck. We'll be following that even more closely than the national team stuff. But cheers for listening, everybody. Keep broadening your horizons and talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
This episode of Footy Prime has been brought to you by Fubo TV and by TonyBet. Make sure to subscribe to Footy Prime wherever you get your podcasts and follow us on Twitter at @footy_prime and on Instagram at @footyprimeIG. And visit wearefootyprime.com and sign up for our newsletter.
Thanks, AC.
But it was a miracle that a code didn't go off overhead. Like, actually a miracle. Amazing.
That a what didn't?
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.